Imagine waking up tomorrow, right, and discovering that the digital assistant you've spent the last 2 years training, the one that, you know, understands your exact workflow, your daily anxieties, your five-year plan, has just been federally banned.
Yeah, that is a terrifying thought.
Right? You can pack up your files, sure. You can hit download on your documents. But how do you pack up a piece of software's understanding of your actual brain?
You really can't. And I mean, that is the defining technological trap of our current era. We have spent the last few decades fighting tooth and nail for data portability, but we are completely unequipped for context portability.
Exactly. And that is perfectly aligned with our mission for today's deep dive.
Yeah.
We're looking at a truly fascinating and honestly slightly terrifying manifesto published just a few days ago on April 2nd, 2026.
Oh, it's a brilliant piece.
It really is. It's titled The Model Trap, written by Vlad Silicu on the local Ghost AI blog. And for everyone listening, if you've ever felt a strange sense of hesitation about switching the AI tools you use every day, this piece strips away that illusion of control we think we have over our software.
Yeah, Vlad's dissection of what he calls model lock-in goes far beyond just, you know, a surface-level complaint about clunky user interfaces.
It's much deeper.
Exactly. This is a profound look into the hidden dangers of the current AI ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he outlines this massive supply chain fragility that the entire tech world has just sort of bought into. And he explores the deeply personal, almost impossible challenge of evaluating an AI against the messy reality of your own life.
So to really grasp the gravity of this trap, I think we need to start with the inciting incident that forced Vlad into this realization. We need to look at what actually made him try to, like, pack up his digital apartment in the first place.
And why the boxes suddenly wouldn't fit through the door.
Yes. Perfect analogy. So what was the actual catalyst here?
Well, the catalyst is tied to a very specific date, March 5th, 2026. This was the day the geopolitical reality of artificial intelligence crashed directly into consumer software.
A huge day for the industry.
Massive. Anthropic, the company behind the Claude models, officially refused a massive Department of Defense contract. That contract would have allowed their technology to be integrated into mass surveillance and autonomous weapon systems.
And the fallout from that refusal was just instantaneous. Anthropic was immediately designated a supply chain risk, and President Trump ordered all federal agencies to stop using their technology.
Right, an outright federal ban.
Yeah, and within hours, OpenAI stepped in and took that exact same Pentagon contract, a move that their CEO Sam Altman later admitted was, and I quote, opportunistic and sloppy.
It was a chaotic 48 hours, to say the least.
It really was. Now, just to be incredibly clear for everyone listening, our goal today isn't to take a political stance on the government or Anthropic or OpenAI.
Right, we're not taking sides.
Exactly. We aren't endorsing any viewpoints here. We are strictly looking at how this specific historical trigger caused an absolute earthquake in the tech world.
And the reaction from the public was an unprecedented surge in ChatGPT uninstalls, while Claude just rocketed to the number one spot on the App Store.
For millions of users were reacting in real time to a corporate policy shift.
Yeah, and Vlad was one of those millions. He decided to migrate his personal life planning, his daily problem solving, all his sensitive brainstorming away from ChatGPT.
He moved it all over to Claude, right? Because he was already using that for his coding work.
Exactly. But the moment he made the switch, he hit a wall.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because leaving your old AI isn't like switching email providers. It's like ditching a friend who has known you for years to hang out with a brilliant new acquaintance.
That's exactly it. The new acquaintance might be incredibly smart, but they don't know your history. The distinction between the old software walled gardens and these new ones is fundamental.
Like the old iCloud or Google Drive days.
Right. In the past, companies like Apple or Google held your files hostage. It took years of pressure from digital rights groups like the EFF and sweeping privacy laws in Europe like the GDPR to finally get those simple export buttons added to our accounts.
But this new lock-in operates on a completely different technical mechanism.
Because the model has accumulated thousands of tiny, invisible interactions, over 2 years, it learned how Vlad thinks through decisions.
It knows his recurring anxieties, the specific way he outlines a complex project, the tone he prefers when he's feeling overwhelmed.
Exactly. And from an engineering standpoint, that accumulated context isn't a simple database row you can just query and download as a spreadsheet.
It's not a neat little folder.
No, not at all. When an AI learns your habits, that knowledge is distributed across the model's weights. Those are the mathematical values that determine how the neural network connects ideas.
It's embedded in the dynamic memory systems, right?
Yes, and shaped by reinforcement history. Essentially, it is a learned behavioral pattern, and that pattern belongs to the architecture of the AI itself, not to the user. You simply cannot export a behavioral dynamic into a ZIP file.
Vlad even admitted something shocking in the piece, which I thought was so vulnerable. He realized that part of what he lost with ChatGPT was what he called a sycophantic relationship.
Oh, the yes man dynamic.
Yes, he knew the AI was sometimes just telling what he wanted to hear. He knew that was ultimately bad for his personal growth, and yet he still missed it.
Which proves how incredibly sticky this context trap is. You miss the dynamic even when you logically know it's flawed.
Right. It creates a switching cost that is entirely invisible to the average person. Nobody is out there tracking context gigabytes the way we track storage space on a hard drive.
No, by the time you realize how deeply embedded your thought processes are in one provider's ecosystem, the thought of starting over is daunting. Painstakingly retraining a brand new model to understand your specific quirks, it feels entirely exhausting.
So Vlad loses his personal context, which is incredibly frustrating for him as an individual. But when you multiply that frustration by 100 million users all reacting to a government ban,
A personal annoyance suddenly turns into the revelation of a systemic global failure. It reveals that the global software ecosystem is operating under a massive illusion of choice.
exactly. You look at your phone screen or your desktop, and it feels like a diverse ecosystem. You have a sleek note-taking app over here, a specialized code editor over there, an AI email assistant, a smart search
But
engine.
when you peel back the interface, what are you actually interacting with?
It's just a severe architectural monoculture.
Yep. Almost every single one of those seemingly independent applications is just what we call an API wrapper. They're essentially sleek new paint jobs slapped over the exact same underlying engines.
Under the hood, they're all calling the same three or four foundation models, GPT-4, Claude, or Gemini. Think of it like a digital electrical grid where only three power plants supply the entire internet.
And they all run on the exact same vulnerable fuel. That shared dependency creates a terrifying resilience problem.
Because if something goes wrong at the source,
Everything downstream fails. If there is a subtle bias introduced in one of those three foundation models, it instantly propagates to thousands of downstream
oh,
products.
wow.
If researchers find a security vulnerability in the training data of Claude or GPT, every single app relying on them inherits that flaw. If a single provider has an outage in their data center, the entire productivity ecosystem of the internet has a bad day.
Vlad mentioned startups in his post that were literally killed overnight, not because their product was bad, but simply because an API pricing tier shifted at the foundation model level.
These few companies have absolute life or death power over the software we use daily.
So, if the cloud API ecosystem is this fragile grid waiting for a blackout, what's the alternative? Like, how does an individual actually break free from this dependency?
Well, the answer Vlad and the local ghost team are pushing is a radical departure from the cloud. They are advocating for the local first rebellion.
Taking the power back.
Literally. This means moving the intelligence entirely out of those massive centralized data centers and downloading it into a physical box sitting under your desk.
But I mean, moving away from a multi-billion-dollar supercomputer comes with a massive trade-off.
Oh, absolutely. The local ghost philosophy relies entirely on local open weight models. We're
Yeah.
talking about open source or freely available models like Llama, Mistral, Qwen, and Gemma.
The ones designed to run on consumer hardware.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, to be intellectually honest about the capabilities here, a model with 7 billion or 13 billion parameters running on your home graphics card is not going to beat GPT-5 on raw reasoning.
Let's pause on that term for a second. For anyone listening who isn't a machine learning engineer, think of parameters as the number of digital synapses a model uses to make connections.
That's a great way to put it.
The models in the cloud have over a trillion of these synapses. The ones you can run at home have maybe 7 or 8 billion. So I have to push back a little here.
Go for it.
I completely get the privacy angle. I understand the desire to not have your sensitive journal entries sitting on a server in California. But are these smaller open weight models actually improving fast enough to warrant abandoning the bleeding edge frontier models?
It's a fair question. But looking at the historical trajectory of the open weights ecosystem, the progress is staggering. The models being produced today, the ones you can download for free, perform at a level that would have been considered literal magic, like frontier technology, just 18 months ago.
Really, just 18 months.
Yeah. They now run adequately on standard gaming computers. And Vlad introduces what he calls the good enough rule. He argues that for personal AI, you don't actually need a trillion parameter behemoth.
Because summarizing a messy journal entry or drafting an email doesn't require the same computational horsepower as, say, discovering a new pharmaceutical drug.
Or writing a complex operating system from scratch. Exactly. Sorting your family photos or finding a correlation between your sleep data and your spending habits, a well-prompted 7 billion parameter model handles those tasks beautifully today.
So it's about the right tool for the job.
Precisely. For personal intelligence, complete architectural independence matters significantly more than a marginal gain in logical reasoning. The absolute most important feature of a local model is that it answers to no one but you, and you can swap it out instantly without losing your digital life.
Okay, let's assume you are entirely convinced. You've joined the local first rebellion, you've got a loud, hot GPU, you stuck it under your desk, and you've just downloaded Llama 3 to replace Llama 2.
Right.
But the moment you boot it up, you hit another brick wall. How do you actually know if the new model is doing a good job?
Yes. This introduces the personal evaluation gap, because the entire artificial intelligence industry currently relies on a massive, highly funded infrastructure for testing models.
Right. We have standardized exams with names like MMLU, Human Evil, Chatbot Arena. Think of those like the SATs or the bar exam for artificial intelligence.
Exactly. They test if a model can do advanced calculus or understand complex legal documents. They are incredibly thorough. But they are built entirely for enterprise deployment and general reasoning. None of those massive benchmarks measure if Claude understands the highly specific naming conventions you use in your personal coding projects.
Or whether Gemini understands your unique habit of cross-referencing Roman history when you're writing blog posts.
Right.
So, what does this all mean for the user? It means that testing models against personal workflows is currently an unsolved problem for the average person.
It's a huge blind spot.
When you use a cloud model, you're essentially forced to rely on the provider's priorities. You just have to cross your fingers and hope that whatever OpenAI or Google engineers optimize for happens to overlap with what you need on a Tuesday morning.
And if you go local, it's entirely your problem, and you have absolutely no tools to solve it, which is exactly what Local Ghost is trying to solve.
Yes. Their entire premise is building personal evaluation capabilities directly into the software.
They want to give you the tools to grade an AI based on your life, not a standardized test.
Their proposed solution works on two distinct layers. I want to break down this framework because it's wildly ambitious, but as we'll see, it's got some incredibly optimistic blind spots. So how does Layer 1 actually work?
Okay, so Layer 1 involves standardized local tests driven by software daemons.
Daemons are just background processes that sit silently on your computer waiting for a specific trigger. Right?
Exactly. Local Ghost has designed daemons for distinct, narrow tasks. For example, they have one called Ghost.Noted. If you feed Ghost.Noted a raw, rambling voice memo, its only job is to prompt the local AI to produce a summary that hits three exact predefined points.
Okay, that makes sense.
Then there's Ghost.Synthed, which is designed to analyze your personal data streams. If it looks at 6 months of your sleep tracking and your credit card statements, it needs to successfully flag the correlation between nights of poor sleep and impulse purchases.
No, that's clever.
And more importantly, it must actively ignore meaningless noise, like a false correlation between Tuesdays and drinking coffee.
And my absolute favorite concept in this piece is Ghost.ShadowD, which acts as an adversarial daemon. It's a background process explicitly designed to push back on your ideas, to play devil's advocate, and to keep you intellectually honest when you are brainstorming.
It's a fascinating concept. So Layer 1 is essentially establishing a baseline. It ensures the AI can follow basic structured commands. But Layer 2 is where the local ghost system attempts something revolutionary.
This is the passive testing part.
Yes. Layer 2 is the personal test suite. Remember Ghost.SynthD. Instead of just running pre-written tests, it passively watches how you use the system over time.
Oh, so it observes when you manually correct an AI's summary.
Exactly. It tracks when you engage in a long debate with the adversarial daemon versus when you just dismiss its pushback. It takes all of those real-world, messy interactions and silently builds a highly personalized evaluation suite in the background.
And here's the mechanical genius of it. It stores all of those behavioral observations in simple, exportable text files, specifically JSON files. It is completely platform agnostic.
Vlad compares it to the portable map editors in old PC games like Doom or Quake. You own the tests. If you want to leave the local Ghost ecosystem, you literally just drag and drop your evaluation files onto a thumb drive and take them with you.
Which is incredible. That mechanism changes everything about how you upgrade software.
Totally. When a hypothetical Llama 4 comes out next year, you don't just blindly install it and hope for the best. You run your personal JSON test suite against it.
The file essentially prompts the new AI with hundreds of your past interactions.
Yep. If it summarizes your journal the way you like and writes code the way you write it, you upgrade. If it fails your personal rubric, you don't. You finally have a systematic mathematical way to measure an AI against your own life.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, though. And honestly, where I think Vlad is being dangerously naive about the reality of consumer technology.
I know exactly where you're going with this.
Right. Because he openly admits in the manifesto that running a 7 billion parameter model through 50 complex personalized evaluation scenarios on today's mid-range graphics cards is painfully slow.
We're talking about the computer groaning under the weight of it, taking an hour just to run a test.
Yes, but his entire bet is that consumer hardware will vastly improve in the next 18 months. He is assuming that soon, running a localized test suite will take a fraction of the time.
And relying on hardware to magically solve software friction is a massive gamble.
It's an enormous blind spot. Hardware trajectories are not guaranteed. Moore's Law, the idea that computing power doubles every 2 years, has been stuttering for a while.
Oh, without a doubt.
If open-weight models plateau in their efficiency, or if graphics cards stay incredibly expensive, running these localized test suites is going to remain a massive friction point. The average person is absolutely not going to sit around listening to their laptop fans scream for an hour just to grade an AI's journal summarizing skills.
No, they won't. And furthermore, Vlad's proposed mechanics raise a serious structural paradox, which, to his credit, he commendably acknowledges as the hard truths of his own system.
What's the main paradox there?
Well, first, subjective tasks like summarizing a deeply emotional journal entry about a family argument cannot be judged deterministically. Two wildly different summaries can both be completely valid depending on what nuance you care about that day.
Right. So how does a background process actually grade a feeling?
It can't use simple word matching. If a daemon just checks to see if the AI used the word angry, you are only measuring surface level vocabulary, not true comprehension.
So it needs to understand the vibe.
Basically, yeah. To grade a complex subjective summary, you have to use an LLM to judge the output of another LLM. And the moment you do that, you have reintroduced the exact model dependency you built this entire local system to escape.
That is wild. So instead of a house of cards, you've built a broken compass that uses itself to find north.
Exactly. And what about that adversarial demon ghost.shadowd Vlad admits that if you script an adversarial AI to only push back on you in highly predictable, predefined testing scenarios.
You've completely defeated the purpose of an adversary.
Right. A devil's advocate that only disagrees with you when it's scheduled to isn't challenging your worldview. It's just performing a parlor trick.
Overcoming these mechanical hurdles brings us to the most profound, unresolved paradox in the entire manifesto. The local ghost system brilliantly frees the user from corporate platform lock-in. You are no longer held hostage by the API pricing of a massive tech giant, and your daily workflow won't be destroyed by a sudden geopolitical ban.
You've officially escaped the walled garden of the tech billionaires.
But by escaping, the system creates a completely new, deeply personal kind of lock-in.
The fossil trap.
Yes, the fossil trap. This part blew my mind.
Think about the mechanics of how this personal test suite is generated. It builds its rubric based on 6 months of your past corrections, your past preferences, and the exact way you wrote code last year.
It literally enforces the preferences of who you were.
Exactly. Without some kind of aggressive decay waiting built into the JSON files, like a mechanism where older preferences are deliberately deleted or ignored over time, the test suite calcifies. It becomes a fossil.
So you're stuck in the past.
Right. Imagine a truly novel, innovative new model is released. This new AI might actually challenge you to write significantly better code, or it might offer a wildly new, unexpected perspective on your journal entries.
But because it doesn't match the historical data in your personal evaluation files, your localized test suite will penalize it and fail it.
Exactly. It fails simply because the new model doesn't conform to the ghost of your past self.
You spent all this time and energy building a system designed to free you from a corporation's walled garden, only to accidentally lock yourself inside a walled garden made of your own rigid habits.
It's a tragic irony.
It really is. And that leaves us with something incredibly vital to think about as these tools become more integrated into our lives. If we actually succeed in this local-first rebellion-like, if we manage to build localized AI systems that perfectly and flawlessly conform to our highly specific, deeply personalized test suites, do we risk trapping ourselves in echo chambers of our own workflows?